Charpoy, a very picture of sexual impudence in her silken robe with one shapely thigh and bare shoulder displayed. And if it hadn't been for the maid's chirruping among the dishes at the end of the room, I'd have made a plunge at her. To no avail, judging by her reply.
Why? I told her the truth, that you were no lover of mine. The brazen wretch swore that I lied, and when I said I had known you but a few hours and on horseback, too, she cried, "Aye, but what of the future?" I said that was in God's hands, and she might slip at my chamber door tonight if she wished, to be sure that no lover came creeping to me.
That was damn considerate of you. But I tell you what, Sultana, I've a notion worth two of that. Why don't she sleep at my chamber door, eh? Now, that would really convince her. She considered me for a long moment, the strong, disdainful face impassive, and then a little imp began to play at the corner of the carved mouth, and she swung her legs off the charpoy in one graceful movement, and stood looking down at me.
"I told her the future was in God's hands," says she coolly. "It is also in mine."
And with that she stooped, brushed her lips on mine, and walked swiftly away, leaving me to the shrill giggles of the maids and the reflection that she was a teasing, provoking, wanton baggage, adept at stoking what old Arnold called the flames of lust, and giving me a gentle hint that the fire brigade would be along shortly. And it was, as I'd expected. I know women, you see, and long experience had taught me that when they start playing Delilah, it's a sure sign that they're coming to the boil themselves. So it came as no surprise, after I'd said my prayers, you may guess their content, and was drowsing in happy anticipation on the charpoy in my peaceful chamber, listening to the distant creaks and murmurs of the sleeping castle, and the occasional cry of some night beast out yonder, that a soft footfall should approach my room, and a gentle draught stir the air as the door opened and softly closed again. But I'm a wary bird, and my hand was on the jostling beneath my pillow, only to let go as a tall figure advanced silently into the shaft of moonlight from the high, narrow window. A figure in a robe of saffron silk, which slid to the floor without a sound, revealing a splendid golden body swaying slowly towards me, slim hands clasped over her breasts, and then falling away to caress her hips as she passed from the moonbeam into the shadow, kneeling on the charpoy and leaning down over me, her expert fingers and those wonderful lips questing across my body. Ordinarily, I'd have said, "Good evening," or "Come in, my dear, it's your birthday." But she had insisted, you remember, that in moments of crisis she and she alone should take the lead. So what could a dutiful soldier do but lie to attention as she made a meal of me, teasing and fondling until I was fit to burst, at which point, fortunately, she began to conduct herself like some randy Roman empress in a rogering competition, bestriding me furiously with ecstatic cries, those unseen lips finding mine at last as she plunged and writhed in a perfect frenzy, grunting and gasping with an abandon which I shouldn't have thought her style at all. But you never can tell how they'll behave in the happy throes. And when she concluded her performance by throwing up her arms and screaming, I confess I entered into the spirit of the thing, uninvited, going between her boobies as she collapsed whimpering on my ruined carcass.
"All of a walk," says I, when I got my breath back.
From the moment we met, I knew our love was fated. And I'm here to tell you, you're the best ride I've had since I left home. For I like to give credit where it's due, you know. I spoke in Arabic, and she replied in a distracted way in what sounded like Amharic, heaving herself up to full stretch above me. And for the first time, her head was in the moonlight. The beautiful Egyptian head and shining black eyes of Serapha's woman. She, too, was breathing with difficulty, smiling at me in a most ingratiating way, and murmuring a question which I could only suppose was a plea for a high mark from the examiner. Well, she'd earned it. 80% at least. Even if my immediate instinct had been to cry, "Sold! Imposter!" But that would have been downright discourteous, after the little darling had exerted herself so splendidly, and I was too blissfully sated to tax myself with wondering why Ulliver Walk had put her up to